Parshas Bo begins with the Makkah of Arba, and it's certainly an overwhelming and daunting Makkah, but you probably wouldn't call it the most dramatic Makkah. That title would probably go to Dam, the first, the glorious, the most graphic, the most iconic for human beings, to see their water, the source of life, be converted to blood, to see the Nile River, the source of Egyptian technology, and national pride be reduced to a festering swamp of death. You wouldn't assume that this would be the Makkah, the most dramatic one. You may give that title to Makkas Bechoros, the death of the firstborn. The entire Egypt was converted into a cemetery of dead bodies. Maybe Barad, the hail and fire falling from Shemayim. There could be many different makot that would be the most dramatic, yet Parshat Bo begins with Arba, a well-known symbol to remember how many are in Va'er and how many are in Bo. The gematria of Bo, Beis Aleph, is 3, so the last 3 are in Bo, and 2 first letters of Va'er, Vav Aleph, are 7, so this is an easy mnemonic. But essentially, the Parsha begins with the Makkah of Arba, but it seems like it's really a new beginning, not just because it commences a Parsha, but it sounds like Hashem tells Moshe, Bo al Paro, and very often Hashem told Moshe to perform the Makkah in front of Paro, so that's not necessarily so surprising. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu repeats to Moshe why he should approach Paro, ki ani yichbariti yaslibo b'slev avadav, because I've hardened his heart. But it's not just that. I want your children and your grandchildren to retell the story about my playing and teasing Mitzrayim and all the signs and miracles. And Moshe and Aaron understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's request and have this dramatic confrontation. Ad matai me'anta le'anot mipanai, how long will you refuse? And then describe the plague, probably in more detail than most of the plagues are described, those which were described. Some of the makos, Paro had forewarning, some of them he didn't, but even when he had warning, he was just told what would happen. But here, there's a lot of description. If you don't, at least 3 psukim, if you refuse, Pasuk Dalet, to dispatch the Jewish people, I'll send Arba, they're going to cover the land, you won't see the land, they're going to consume the remainder, which Bara didn't affect, and your houses will be full of all these locusts, of all these Arba. One thing is clear. Arba is not just your average Makkah, but signals some transition. What's happening as we transition from the Makos of Va'era to the Makos of Bo, with Arba being the transition point? It seems that something is up. Something is happening in this transition. Now, in part, transition to Arba symbolizes Am Yisrael taking more of an active role. We don't really see Am Yisrael having any role in Va'era. And part of that is intentional. The Geula from Mitzrayim was unilateral, because Baruch Hu redeems Am Yisrael as a young bride in the Pesukim in Yecheskel, which we recite the night of the Seder, which were compared to a premature or a prepubescent teenager, unready yet for the real world, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu sweeps down and takes us off of our feet and sweeps us into the Midbar. So it's clear that Am Yisrael didn't have a role, and in part may not have been expected to have a role, but somehow, in Parshas Bo, as the Geula accelerates, there's some role. It's not that much pronounced, but there's a role. So, for example, during Makas Choshech, that was the opportunity for the Jewish people to search the Egyptian homes for the riches and for the vessels, which they had ultimately removed from Mitzrayim. They had a role to fulfill HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise to Avram. So they were active. They weren't just passive. They're no longer just passive victims wallowing and waiting. But they were actively participating, again, in very small detail. And during Makas Bechoros, obviously Am Yisrael performs the ceremonies of what we now know to be the Leil HaSeder. It was a much earlier version, Karm Pesach, Matzah, Moro, Dam on the doorpost. So they had a role the night of Bechoros. And the role in Arba, we don't really see their role, but there's no question they're expected to witness and to begin to tell the story. And telling a story to your children is not the act of a slave. A slave is stuck in a morass of history without future, without children, without family. All of a sudden the family is rebuilt in the beginning of Parshas Bo. And part of that rebuilding and rehabilitation of families, telling them the story and expecting that story to pass not just to one generation, but to multiple generations. So Am Yisrael has to be active in Gula. And much of Mitzrayim deactivated them. Much wasn't expected of them. One of the great miracles, Rav Ami tells the Koran of the Bracha, would always tell us about the independence war in Eretz Yisrael, is not just that we repelled so many Arabs who invaded, so many legions from different countries in different directions, but that we repelled them with a band of war refugees, people that had literally left the concentration camp months earlier, or maybe a few years earlier. You can't really expect refugees and war-torn fugitives and people who were gassed and dehumanized to be able to fight a war. War requires training. War requires confidence in self, ability to be militaristic. That's why ultimately in the next parsha, in Parshas B'Shalach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't travel through the coast, which would have been the easiest straight shot into Eretz Yisrael, because he fears that this band of slaves can face the mighty warriors and mercenaries of the Plishtim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants Eretz Yisrael to be conquered in part through natural means, and then wants Am Yisrael to fight. So even though in Parshas Ve'era we don't really recognize a role for the Jewish people, somehow in Parshas Bo, with the commencement of the final three Makot, we sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being partnered with by a human hand, by Am Yisrael, playing some role. Mishchu k'chul lechem tzom. In a broader sense, as the parsha evolves, they're not just commanded to sacrifice the Korban Pesach on the 14th, but to acquire it 4 days earlier. That's the source of Shabbos HaGadol, because Yetzias Mitzrayim originally took place on Thursday, which would place Tesvav Nisan as a Thursday, which would make the 10th of Nisan the Shabbos before, and that was the first act of heroism. That was the first Shabbos HaGadol. That's when they stood up to their Egyptian oppressors and showed some spine, and not just standing up to the Egyptian oppressors, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hope was that by slaughtering the goats, or in this case the sheep, and preparing that process a couple of days in advance, as Chazal Darshan, Mishchu u'kechul lechem tzon, Mishchu yedechem me'avodah zarah. Because the Egyptians worshipped the sheep, and as Chazal described, Am Yisrael also worshipped the sheep. That's why at the Yam Suf, the Malachim complained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why the Egyptians being drowned, the Jews are passing safely. As the Malachim complained, Halalu ovdei avodah zarah, Halalu ovdei avodah zarah, the Jews had sunken into paganism in Egypt. Very clear in Sefer Yechezkel and Perek Chaf, when the Gulas Mitzrayim is described in less glowing terms. And so it wasn't just a moment to defy their oppressors. It was also a moment to try to jumpstart the redemption by taking a few steps back from the pagan culture, which had begun to encroach upon the Jewish mind. So there's no question that Am Yisrael becomes much, much more active as the three Makos begin to unfurl. Beyond that, the three Makos are more direct inversions of Maaseh Bereishis. Anytime HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes in science and in nature, it's a reversion or an inversion of Maaseh Bereishis. It's a very famous machlokus. The Rambam didn't believe that. The Rambam believed that every miracle was preordained and pre-programmed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed the frogs when he created them during the days of creation, the 6 days of creation. He programmed their DNA that 2,448 years into history, they would feel the need to jump out of the Nile and to circulate throughout Mitzrayim. Or HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed the water of the Nile to turn into blood. Or HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed the waters of the Yam Suf to split 2,448 years into history. It's a very well-known position of the Rambam. Many argue that in many ways this diminishes the power of miracles. The power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's miracles is to dafka sweep into nature and alter it and tear it asunder. But the Rambam has his sources, and the Rambam has his very, very well-known shita about Nisan. But either way, even if you feel that they're preordained, they clearly are a deviance from the natural day-to-day science and physics of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. But it's in the last three Makos that we see Maaseh Bereishis being more directly targeted. The locusts, and it's very clear that the Arba are attacking the vegetation. They're attacking the Yochal Eskol Esev Haaretz. By Yochal Eskol Esev Haaretz, the Torah repeats again and again, both in the warning to Paro as well as in the actual execution. V'lonosar kol yarek be'etz u've'esev hasada. The trees, and not just the trees, but the grass and the carpet That's just the desha, but the Eshev Haaretz. And you can't really read about the Arvik considering the Eshev Haaretz without remembering Tad Shei Haaretz Desha, Eitz Pri Yol Sipri. So that stage of Maaseh Bereishis in which the world is being carpeted by vegetation, by foliage, that is being attacked through Makas Arba. And you can't help but reading Vayhi Choshech about darkness descending over the entire country of Egypt for a three-day period. Vayhi Choshech Hafeva B'chal Eretz Mitzrayim Shlosha Yamim. So you can't really read that without remembering Yihi Or, Vayhi Or, Vayhi Choshech. So the basic day-night cycle of Maaseh Bereishis was being altered. And then finally, Makas Bucharis is a plague of death, which suspends HaKadosh Baruch Hu's original creation of life, Vayivra Elokim Es HaAdam. Actually, there's a very interesting medrash that during Bries HaOlam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already informed Choshech that it would have some role in Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it's almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't just performing miracles for the Egyptians to buckle to his authority, practically to release the Jewish people, not just for the Jews to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Makos are also educational for the Jewish people. They have to learn. There's a slow progression of their own religious maturity. Remember in Parsha Shmos, when Moshe questions his mission, and part of his delay and his hesitance is, how do I introduce you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to a people whose minds have been narrowed by the servitude of slavery? You have to have a broad mind and an open imagination to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how should I present you to them? And Hashem tells them, hey, Asher, hey, just tell them stories about their Zaidi and Babi. I was there for Avram, I'll be there for them. You're right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu effectively tells Moshe. Again, hey, Asher, has deep theological meaning. But at a literal level, Hashem is just telling Moshe, tell them stories, and ultimately as the redemption unfurls, they'll learn more about me, they'll understand me more, they'll be brought to the point where they can actually recite on the Yom Suf, Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Vo'ed. They're able to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Melech or as an Ish Milchamah, or they're able to understand Zeki Livian Ve'u, Zeki Aviv Aramenu. So they're growing in their religious maturity. So part of the Makos is just teaching the Jewish people a little bit more. Vayar Yisrael Ziyad HaGidolah is not something they're capable of understanding and processing during the bondage of Mitzrayim. But part of the last three Makos is essentially the world is being recreated. The original carpet of the world is being removed. The original time continuum is being altered, and death is now replacing life. And that's for one reason. The Jewish people have to see Parshas Bo as almost a redo of Parshas Bereishis. You have some of this already in the beginning of Sefer Shemot, where the Jewish people are compared in the way that they multiply. Very well-known pasuk in the beginning of Shemot, V'nei Yisrael paru v'yishritzu v'yirbu v'yatzmu b'mod mod v'tmelei haaretz l'sham. Sounds very much like the spontaneous growth, not spontaneous, but energetic growth out of the swamp when that fifth day when the fish and the water-based creatures were created. Yishritzu amayim sheretz l'minehem v'of yofev baretz. When Moshe is born, it says Vateiros Okitov, reminiscent of Ayarokim Miskalashar Sadni Tov Miod. But as Geula kicks into high gear, Geula just starts in Shemot, as the Jewish people multiply, and part of Geula is not just apocalyptic visions of Jewish renewal, but just having a lot of Jews, returning Jewish population. And that's why when the Jewish people start to populate in great numbers in Sefer Shemot, it's really the first sign of Geula, that we're able to have a stable situation that allows us to raise large families and stability, economic stability, and political stability. But as the Geula really kicks into high gear in Parshas Bo, then all of a sudden it's important that we see this not just as a historical moment, but as the creation of a world. A Jew lives through two time continuums. There are two Rosh Hashanahs. There's the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei when the world was created. There's the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, in which not just the world, the universe, the material world was created, but history was created. And the Jew has to be sensitive to both roles. We live as part of a broader natural existence, a cosmos, a universe, where we're like any other matter in this world, and any other human beings for that matter, but we have a unique calling, and that's a historical calling, to bring Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence into this world at a national level, by reaching our national ambitions and our national fate. And HaChodesh is that Lachem Rosh Chodesh. No one enjoys the new year of Nisan, the new year of Pesach, other than the people who are authors of history, and not just Jews. The famous Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that when we date contracts, so if we're dating the contract based on the Gentile king's reign, the third year of Caesar's reign, the fourth year of Caesar's reign, then the transition point at which the next year turns is Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. So for example, if let's say Caesar ascends the throne in the summertime, and we're writing a contract in the ensuing fall, this will be the second year of Caesar's reign, even though he's only been in office for a few months. But the turnaround is Rosh Hashanah. That's when the world changes into a new year, and Caesar has now ruled Rome for 2 years, the year before Rosh Hashanah and the year after Rosh Hashanah. He's ruled for part of those 2 years, and the dating of the contract is styled accordingly. But a Jewish king, the turnaround is not Tishrei, but the turnaround is Nisan. So if Shaul ascends the throne in Adar, and when we draft the contract in the summer, in the ensuing summer, so we date the contract the second year of Shaul's reign, only if he's passed the Nisan, because Jews don't live in the universe. They live there as well, but they live as part of history, as part of authors of history, with a message for history, with a struggle of history. And interestingly enough, the Gemara says that if there's a king who is sympathetic to the Jews, a Gentile king, then his dating is altered not to a Tishrei-based dating scheme, but to a Nisan-based dating scheme, because he's participating in history. He's participating in the process of redeeming a world with the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just living in a world of material, to being actively authors of redemptive history, not just to be passive pawns, to be like a tree or a river, which is part of history and drawn irrepressibly by natural forces, but we're part of that history. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to remind us that the events that are going down, that are taking place, that are unfolding in Mitzrayim, in Parshas Bo, commencing with Chodesh Nisan, they're creating an additional world that's meant to change the world of nature and of the universe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. We're meant to lend spirit to the world of the universe, to the world of nature. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu effectively has to recreate the natural world. And the makos are not just penalties or punishments to Paro or educational tools to the Jewish people or practical releases of the Jewish people, but Hashem is reminding us that everything that's been created until now, all the day and night that's functioned uninterruptedly until now, and all the carpeting of the earth with foliage and grass that's been extant until now, and of course the life that's continued without interruption, the firstborn, which is a sign of the new generation and symbolic of bringing the new generation into this world, all of that is going to be altered or transformed by the introduction of a new concept, the concept of redemption, the concept of the Jewish people with a message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally wanted to be latent in nature, that everyone would see it inherent in nature, there'd be a universalism to it, but ultimately man couldn't grasp, couldn't understand it, if it were spread and disseminated equitably, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to select one people to live a more calling, a more mission, a higher calling, and to then disseminate that message. So the events of Sefer Shmos parallel the events of Sefer Bereishis, and the events of Parshas Bo more directly parallel and transform the events of Sefer Bereishis, and the last three makos herald that, and that's why the makos represent a bit of a new start. Not just because the Jewish people are activated to have a role in the redemption, because the redemption is fused to the creation of our world and the three makos of the bridge. Shabbat Shalom.